that's how it was supposed to be last time. Instead of it, I got tangled in my own rope. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is, one of our many sponsors this hour is Pape Machinery.
The one you get to talk about, you mean?
That's right.
Your favorite one.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they are our premier John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And if you need a mower or a tractor or implement, if it's green, go up and talk to them because they can get it for you if they don't have it in the yard. So they got good inventories right now. And full parts and service. You buy something there, they're going to fix it if something goes wrong. They also work on other brands. You can talk to them about that. And their phone number, if you'd like to give them a call, is 530-226-9226. And you can also get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
So, you are listening to We the People. You can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You were going to say it, weren't you?
No, I was going to.
You were going to
turn it loose, see if you remembered how.
I know. I remember how. Huh. And there's all sorts of good information in there on how to sponsor the show, if you've got ideas for shows. You know, there are a lot of people out there, I'm finding, who are experts in what they do. They don't get enough airtime. And if there's an interview, I was talking to a guy who does a show up out of Susanville, and we were having this conversation that it's super frustrating to hear people interviewed for just a few minutes at a time because you don't wind up learning anything. So we try to do the rest of the story, kind of like Paul Harvey used to do way back when. But let people talk about their issues. So we've had enough shows on marijuana, China, environmentalism, national security, veterans, South Africa, and Islam to actually fill categories on the website. So you can always go on there. If you want to see a specific category, you can follow the shows on there. But we have 13 years of archives, free to listen. Robert, who sits in with us a lot, he takes all the free market breaks out of it, so you don't have to do that. You can hit a show in about an hour and 40 minutes, separated by the first hour, the second hour, easy to download. You can do whatever you want with it, and we hope you make use of it because we do the show to provide information to the public. And again, if you've got ideas for people, call us, email us. Our information's right there on the site at wethepeopleradio.us. And there was something else I was going to say. Oh, my free advertisement of the week, Nicolette Glass here in Reading. You know what? If you still have really blazing hot sun shining through your windows, you should get those screens that block out 90% of the UV. We put them on our kitchen. Oh, my God. The kitchen's like 10 degrees cooler every morning. Yeah. Spectacular.
Yeah.
They got out there, did the quote. We called, do the screens. They were back on in, like, I don't know, 2 weeks. And in the meantime, the nice guy who came to install the screens helped me flip the glass on our table, the giant piece of glass, so I could clean the bottom half. They are super helpful and super nice and a really good value. So there you have it. Back to you, Nathan. where should we go this hour? What did we not talk about that you had on your list? I'm sure you had a terribly long list, and we just fiddle-diddled around and got you all, you know, sideways on it. But what with your article, you want to go into some more of that?
Well, I could, just for information purposes, I could touch maybe really quick on some of the coal details in Montana.
Yeah, we love information purposes.
Yeah, the right-of-way rule and these things, these are all things that are happening currently and in process. So on the coal front, we have the Powder River Basin, which is situated in Wyoming and Montana. And that basin contains up north of 80% of the subsurface coal estate that is administered by Bureau of Land Management in the nation. So that's not private coal. That's all federal administered mineral estate. So a huge amount of that federal estate is in the Powder River Basin from a federal government perspective. And currently 40% of all production nationally is coming out of the Powder River Basin, including all coal production. So the Corps has forced rewrites of environmental impact statements for the Miles City Field Office and the Montana side, which is calling for the two preferred alternatives that they had out for comment on the draft impact statement. Right now, the available acreage for lease of that coal is 1.2 million acres. The two preferred alternatives, one reduced it to 52,000 acres, the other to zero. So that's a 95% decrease of leasable subsurface coal estate in the Powder River Basin and in the Miles City Field Office from what was just approved in 2019 in a final record decision.
Wow.
So,
and what prompted this massive, what prompted this huge change?
Well, so all the RMPs across the West, 2015, went through an amendment process for the sage-grouse stuff. And that was what prompted this, because out of that, there was provisions brought in a couple groups, and I think the Sierra Club was one of the groups that was a litigator on that. So it was a sue the agency approach. So they were, so under the Trump administration, they did a full impact statement and analyzed alternatives and issued the final decision that was finalized in 2019. And those same list of litigants sued again, and somehow were successful through an activist judge here in Montana to force them to open up the whole process again. And what they did this last go round, and this is of deep concern to our conversations about carbon thus far. What it essentially did is they forced the BLM to take into consideration greenhouse gas emissions as a proxy for climate change. That's not my language. That's the language in the court order, and that was developed as an analysis by Bureau of Land Management for that region. So they're using these totally new impacts analysis is being directed by the court, not the Congress, to analyze downstream greenhouse gas emissions as a proxy for climate change, and they're using that as a justification to reduce the leasable amount of coal in the basin. And likely this is going to be challenged at some level if they actually, because this is in draft right now, they got comments on the rule, but the two preferred preliminary alternatives push for huge reductions of leasable coal estate in eastern Montana. And they left out nine counties which have current leasable coal that's currently leasable under the existing framework out of the socioeconomic impacts analysis in their documents. So there's some problems there.
What? Okay, so for people
Montana,
who don't deal with
that,
this kind of stuff,
go ahead.
Why would they have done that? What is your speculation? How about that?
Well, it's similar to what they're focusing impacts analysis on the greenhouse gas emission side of things, but not doing due diligence on the economic impacts analysis side of things. So because there's no mining taking place in those counties currently, they didn't do a thorough impacts analysis or even included in the so they only included the socioeconomic region where the existing mines are. But this rule isn't about existing mines, it's about leasable coal estate. So in other words, those nine counties that have a substantial amount of coal within their counties have potentials of private enterprise to invest and develop those resources, which generates significant amount of revenue for the private sector, and as well as the state and local counties, the way the tax structure is that fund those local governments and those rural communities. So if they remove the leasability of that coal, they're removing any potential of real economic development on the mineral estate in those counties. And So that, so my view is they didn't do a socioeconomic impacts analysis of that because they don't want to look at what those numbers actually are.
Yeah, they don't want people to...
How convenient.
People to know that information.
It's like a, that's like how dogs logic things out, you know. If they look the other way, you can't see them. So if they,
well,
don't,
exactly.
if they don't look, it's
catch me
not hurting anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyways, that's those. That's kind of the nitty-gritty of the rule. Bottom line is, though, for your listening audience, is, and the reason this is important is because this is a Montana region, but it has impacts that are nationwide because it's a huge amount of the subsurface coal estate that's administered by the Bureau of Land Management in the country. So tying up those the capacity of leasing those lands or those that mineral estate for productive purposes back to the shift to this renewable energy push is it's not just they're shifting the renewable energy. They're forcing a generation shift away from our carbon-based sources to these unreliable, unsustainable, cost-ineffective systems that have never really been proved for their purposes.
Now, is this reversible? I mean, the way they're going about this, can it be reversed? Either legislatively, or I know a lot of things they do is by executive order, and that's all temporary. But can this be reversed?
So that's a very good thing you bring up there, and the answer is so right now this is not a final rule yet. This is still in process. This is just what the agency is proposing for alternatives to shut off that leasability. So they're going to come out with a final impact statement. I just submitted comment on this. I believe the state did. Other entities, counties submitted comment on this. So they're going to review those comments. They're going to change the impact statement accordingly or if they necessary. And then they're going to issue a final draft with a decision. And then it goes through a 60-day comment period, 30-day protest, and there's also a 60-day consistency review with this governor's office. So this is all in process. So it's not final yet. So it's reversible in the context that it's not done yet. We have opportunity, and I've equipped the record on this front, and like I said, other entities have. And the state's very interested in this, too, because a lot of that coal estate through those nine counties is checkerboarded with state trust lands. And checkerboard means there's a section that's federal, and then right kitty corner there's a section that's state land, and it's like that across the large region. So if the BLM shuts off the leasable coal estate on the federal lands, they're indirectly shutting off the capability of leasing the state coal estate.
Right.
Because most in those checkerboard contexts, the state and federal government have to work together for the feasible context of mining the coal. So there's another 1.5 million acres of state land, roughly, mineral estate that would indirectly be tied up in this decision as well.
So bottom line is that all that property is owned by taxpayers, supposed to be for the benefit of taxpayers, being cared for by either the federal government or the state government for the benefit of taxpayers.
Right, but at some point, doesn't that decision have to be voted on to make it actually permanent? Or BLM's famous for making rules that we all have to live by, but...
Well, they go through their process, and then the rule is the rule. You can undo the rule, I suppose, but I don't know.
Once they go through the full public processes, they issue a record of decision. It's not law per se, but it carries the force of law in an actual process. And that's some of the problems with probably our Congress has delegated way too much functions. Well, another problem is can the government like a friend of mine, I've had the opportunity to meet. I shouldn't say friend. I've met him, a brilliant man out of Utah, would say, is what in the Constitution grants the federal government the power to perpetuate and build a land empire out of a nation of states?
Exactly.
And that's part of the problem we have here, is the federal government controls administratively a lot of that real estate or subsurface mineral estate. And now historically, it hasn't been as huge of an issue. We've always had issues with federal government on certain, you know, land stuff, but, you know,
but they see this as their own land, and that is, I mean, I think we need to slap the federal land out of everybody's mouth. It's public land. It belongs to the taxpayer, and they are supposed to be taking care of that land at the behest of the taxpayer and being paid by the taxpayer to do it. And instead, you're locked out. You can't have it. You can't use the resources. And now that we've set them aside and they could benefit all of us, nope. We're not doing that because we've decided some bird, some bush, some fish, some special group of people is more important than all of you, but you still get to pay the bill. We have to take a really quick break on that note. We'll play you something happy.
Boy,
so you know,
just hanging on that.
So you don't feel angry all the time. You know, we'd like to mix it up a little bit. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I ain't rich, but I damn sure wanna be. Working like a dog all day ain't working for me. I wish I had a rich uncle that'd kick the bucket and I was sitting on a pile like Warren Buffett. I know everybody says money can't buy happiness, but it can buy me a boat. It can buy me a truck.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Did you know the non-native noxious weed we call marijuana is a thirsty plant? It uses up to 5 gallons of water a day in our climate. Most marijuana in California is chemically laden with pesticides, herbicides, miticides, growth hormones, and even adhesives like methacrylate used to boost pollen capture. Methacrylate? What the heck? Superglue? All this goes into the human body from unknowing users looking to get high. I call them the walking as yet undead. Remember, let's be safe out there.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
Answer to that is yes.
Yeah, Nathan, you're making me crazy. You're just telling me way too much.
If you know too much, they call you crazy, but if you know too much, it makes you crazy. So I don't know. I mean, I think instead of all roads lead to Rome, I think all roads lead to yes there. Oh my God. Sometimes the more you look at this, though, the more out of control it gets. And you look at this. You look at this kind of stuff all the time. Are you finding that it's the same thing, just different format? I mean, there's a lot of repetition to what it is they're doing and how they're doing it.
Yeah. There's a lot happening across the board at once, and you got to pick your battles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm in Montana. I work policy issues that are more broad sweeping that touch other states as well, but predominantly, obviously, I live in Montana, so I'm more oriented and focused on some things that are taking place on the ground here, like the coal, and the right-of-way rule applies to basically all the western states and federal lands in general.
Well, and it hits everybody. We're all paying for it. And it, when they start taking resources out of the system, that hits everybody's wallet. That's the thing, you know. Sometimes this natural resource, well, okay, not sometimes, a lot of the time. Natural resource policy is not a particularly, you know, captivating topic. I think sometimes think like, wow, why do they do so many shows on this stuff? It's because if you don't know this is happening, you're losing your liberty and by way of resources and your choices, and you don't even know it.
Yeah. Well, as I always say, everything comes from the ground. There's consequences to breaking away. Even our law comes from the ground. Our whole common law heritage. Well, there's actually two systems of law in history, and one is the law of the land. Notice law of the land, and the law of the city. One of those is common law, and the other one is Babylonian law. Those are the two competing influences. And by the way, our Reformed founding fathers in the 14, 15, and 1600s, the main battle was the common law courts versus the civil laws. And the common law courts had their jury by trial, and the civil law courts had their inquisition. And so it's the same battle then, same battle now, but everything comes from the ground, and that's one of the reasons I've made natural resources and private property rights one of the priorities in my life in that context and some of the work I do, because that has such a broad impact on, as you said, all the other freedoms and all the other things we enjoy in the world depends on the freedom associated with developing and accessing and owning as individual people and private property, land, your business, the material products that you trade and barter on the market. It's essential, and we've been pretty severed from that as a people, and like I said at the beginning of the program, we need to. My question is, how did we get so removed from those founding principles? Because that's where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other part of it is it's really complicated. They've made it just insanely complicated, where the processes and how you weigh in and the records of decision and just even the lingo is confusing and complicated. And so the average person who has a job and a family, and the more we press on them, the more they, you know, the more time they work and try to make ends meet and all that, they don't have time to delve into all that. So a lot of the people who could support you on this probably don't, just because they don't really understand it.
Well, it's you know, most Republicans and conservatives or people out there that care about liberty are focused on one branch of our government, and that's the legislative branch.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my work, I work with legislators and senators and representatives at the state and national level to some extent. But most of my work is focused on engaging the executive branch and equipping the record in such a way that when the judiciary comes into the picture through litigation to check the executive branch, my goal in the work I do is to equip the record and inform the record, because that's what goes to the judge's desk in those processes. But for the average person out there, absolutely, they know things are not good. They know things aren't going in a good direction. And most of our Republican outreach stuff is focused on elections and the legislative side as well, which that's important, and we need good people in the legislature. But I made a point. Here's a point I made to a friend talking about this the other day, is if you study back to common law and our history and heritage, the Parliament in England, clear up until the 1500s, 1600s, was a law-finding body. not a law-making body. And people historically forget that. We get our kids all ramped up in all these programs to learn the legislative process and bring your bill. But that's just as dangerous. We have everybody bringing their bill, but nobody looking at the original covenants and contracts and systems that are embedded in our original organic law, that all legislation is to be in pursuance thereof. So we have a whole bunch of unconstitutional legislation, which is part of the reason we have the bureaucratic issue that we've been discussing, because the legislature has illegitimately ceded its rulemaking power, lawmaking function, to the executive branch. And the judiciary, instead of checking the executive branch oftentimes on it, is helping the executive branch usurp the legislative prerogative.
Yeah, or deferring to them, even worse.
Exactly.
So when regular people, challenge them on it rather than looking, is there their ability to make those rules, is it legitimate? They look at it, well, you know, if the agency's bringing it, they must have done their homework. So I think that's where the Chevron decision from, what, a couple of two, 3 months ago came in and said, you know, we're not going to, you guys can't defer to these guys all the time. I'll be curious to see how that comes out in the lower courts. I mean, that was a great Supreme Court decision. And hopefully some of the judges will take advantage of that. But, I'm not sure people understand that a lot of the problems are created in the executive branch. And so when they'll say, like, oh, well, it's the uniparty. Everything's the same. It doesn't matter who we have for a president. And I'm like, you know, the executive branch is really the place where you've got a lot of problems.
Well, and, you know, if we were functioning under the constitutional framework intended by our founders, that's why we have individual states, and because it's not just the legislative, executive, judicial. We have a subdivision of what James Madison called a compound republic in individual states with a whole other framework of legislative, judicial, and executive separated powers. And then we have another breakdown and subdivision in our local counties and municipalities. And the final aggregate of sovereign power and function is the individual landowner, the individual person and his possessions. It's the old, back to the English common law saying, a man's house is his castle. That's what we need to be reconnected to as a people. And that's where, when it comes to talking to people, like you said, the average person, what do they even do? Or how do they understand this stuff? I usually don't start and try to start with all the bureaucratic stuff and we need to do this here and there. Some people that work in those realms, I help in those areas. But my main passion, which is really the only reason I get involved in government the way I do, is reconnecting people to our heritage. Who we are as a people, where we come from, life, liberty, property, the cornerstones of a just society, which starts, by the way, in the home and the family. It's a sovereign jurisdiction. And I love the word jurisdiction because it comes from two Latin words. Juris is law and diction dictate to speak. So our responsibility is to be acquainted with our laws. And when I say laws, I'm not talking about the thousands of pages of bureaucratic rules. I'm talking about the Constitution, federal and state, wherever you live, the original documents, the Federalist Papers, and other crucial documents. Well, the Bible, there's another foundational one. The number one most cited book by our founders, the Scriptures, which, by the way, 1700s, 1600s, 1500s, that was the whole freedom of religion, was the free access to the word. So we've gotten to where we are by being severed from that heritage through the takeover of our institutions, teaching an alternative perspective that is the antithesis to our Judeo-Christian worldview, which is absolutely essential for all these things we've been talking about of limited government and private property, mm-hmm. and free markets. That's crucial. So my message in that context to the people that want to be more involved and know what's going on, your first step isn't finding the next BLM rule out there and reading the documents and trying to analyze and deal with that. It's
definitely not
connected to your heritage.
Well, you make a really great point. I think we tend to focus on bureaucratic rules and not the word law. I mean, our laws are what we need to get back to, and we just overlook so many things in our society today that are laws that we don't enforce, but we get all hung up on these rules that, you know, are really should be a side note to our judicial system, which is based in rule of law, and we're not doing that anymore, and we got to figure out a way to get back to that.
We were supposed to make this whole thing for the benefit of the people who lived in the country.
Yeah,
what a great idea! The rules were just keep orders.
Yeah,
so
now we're just making rules to control everybody within our borders. Which is
well, not everybody.
Well, that's
it's
true.
Mostly Nathan, you, me, and Robert, and probably Liam in there.
Yeah, we need to be controlled because we're out of control. But the elites definitely don't play by the same set of rules. So,
well, they don't, but the fact is they will be held accountable by, see, the rules, it's like the old saying, show me your lawmaker and I'll show you your God.
Yeah.
And these people, their God is just like the gods of the ancient world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Pharaoh's top, you know, magicians and soothsayers, as soon as Moses got through some of those final works of God in the palace there, even they were like, we can't do that. That's beyond us. This must really be God, you know. So these elites out there, these people that are, that's the thing, show me your law and I'll show you your God. And they don't follow the same rule, but they will be held accountable to that rule. And that day is coming, whether, in my opinion, part of our responsibility in the world, in a free society, is to check one another, even in our personal relationships, to hold one another accountable to basic principles of life, liberty, and property. To, you know, even with my little girls, I mean, the two things that I use as a foundation for teaching them, on them fighting over who gets the toy first or who gets to ride on Papa's dirt bike, is the two fundamental principles of common law. Keep your agreements, that's contract law, and don't encroach upon others, and that's tort law.
Mm-hmm.
All just law flows out of those two principles. Anything beyond that is arbitrary and capricious because it's man dictating to his fellow man how he is to function, and only God has that function and authority to do that. And even God doesn't do that.
No, God said, go ahead and go make all the mistakes you want. We'll sort you out at the end. P.S. You should probably not make those mistakes.
Yeah. Well, it's self-government. So this boils back down to self-government. So what we have in the West, and I'll put this in historical terms, we have a reassertion of the royal prerogative. And the royal prerogative is a legal doctrine that existed obviously in the crown, under the crown in England, but the way I'm using it in the modern context is the royal prerogative is the umbrella term for the crown's non-statutory powers. So like back to these agencies making these rules, they're making them on, in some cases, non-statutory power. So that is, by definition, the assertion of the royal prerogative. And I'll remind your audience that one of the reasons our founding fathers ending up throwing off the English system was for that very reason. From 1600 up until the 1750s, the colonies under their charter governments established very strong systems of local self-government. And the royal governors that were placed by the king in these colonies started to witness that firsthand and came directly in contact with that development of self-government. And rather than being like, man, those people are really industrious and they're really doing well, they're like, they regarded that as an invasion of the royal prerogative. So that's where the issues in the colonies leading up to our Revolutionary War started, was they didn't like the self-governing context that the colonies were establishing under their charter governments, and they weren't opposing the English Constitution. All of that was established under English common law. But that's just a part of our history, that royal prerogative, and we put that to death in the Constitution of the United States of America. Once for all, but we see this same royal prerogative coming back and asserting itself. And what you saw the governors in the colonies doing to quell the self-government involved control of the press.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, all the things that we're into now.
Taxation.
Hold that list, and we will. I'm gonna lay some blame on the prerogative. Apparently, Bobby Brown is responsible for it, and so let's blame him. We'll come right back with our guest Nathan Dishmaker.
This is Navy carrier pilot call sign 6 with a message to veterans. Local marijuana hucksters are offering free samples to veterans claiming that marijuana helps PTSD. These claims are not supported by legitimate medical studies, the VA or the FDA. Will you join me to protect our youth and our country from psychosis-inducing high-potency THC use? For the truth, please visit the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis at www.indiaalphasierraindiacharlie1.org. Thank you.
As close to heaven as Bobby Brown's ever going to get. Oh, wait. Sorry.
Nice.
But I digress. Oh, my God. I'm such a heretic. Save me, Nathan. So, you really bring up an excellent point, all joking aside. But we are going back to what we left, you know, over 200 years ago. We left that system because we didn't like it. And here we are again.
Mm. And what we're losing is the principle of self-government. And the problem is you need a virtuous people for self-government to consist. But just to finalize what I was saying before the break there on how the royal governors were coming against the colonies, you can see the spirit of how they dealt with the colonies developing these self-governing charters and functioning under them in the royal instructions that were sent at the time, which aimed at restraining the liberty of the press, and which thus denied the colonists the freedom of mind. And they also refuse to allow them the writ of habeas corpus, which, according to English common law, deprived them of one of the great guards to personal liberty. And they also were against popular representation. So this was taking place in the 1740s and 50s, 20 plus years before the Revolutionary War, that this was taking place to control the speech of the colonists through the control of the press, to control their mind and thinking thereby, and refusing them the writ of habeas corpus. And those were the instructions that were given to the governors in order to maintain the royal prerogative in early colonial America.
Well,
which is very interesting in what we're seeing today.
Yeah, exactly.
Very similar.
And are you in the circles that you travel? Do people see that, or do they just? I mean, I think everyone feels it, but I'm not sure they're putting those things together.
Well, so that's the other side of what I'm trying to do, and the work I'm doing is, I think everybody intuitively knows this. But so what I'm trying to do is there's nothing new under the sun, and you know, I've made our history and our heritage a study of my death. That's why I stress it so much, because everything else I do comes from those foundations. So that's at least in the sphere of influence that I'm involved in, I'm trying to resurrect this language. To give historical context to the issues. And that's the point of history, by the way. History isn't about listing the presidents in the right order and this happened at this date and this happened at that date. History is understanding the record of the past to know and understand the nature of man and how things function, and then to apply it to the day you're living in. That's the purpose of history, is application. So with what you just said, to the degree I'm able to, that's why I'm, you know, sharing this with you guys on the program here, because this is actually currently on my desk, where I'm studying through some of this on the history of the colonies and how all this developed. And when you look around what's happening around us, the same efforts of government power to centralize control are being utilized. In some ways, where it's worse today, because we don't have a brute force tyranny like they did then, but it's what I call, or Tocqueville called, a democratic tyranny, and it places people under tyranny without the pains that came along with it physically with historical tyranny. So sadly, in that context, I think people are willing to go along with tyranny in government today, because of the sophisticated systems we live within, than they would have historically. Because the results of that tyranny would have been more painful for the individual person than what we see today. They're pushing off the pain to consolidate the control. But the pain is coming, so we better, while we have time and have the ability to stand for something, stand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it, a lot of this is really stemming too from the removal of God from our schools, from our government, from all of it, and we're lacking direction now.
Sure, because that void gets filled. So it's climate change. It's social policy.
All kinds of things.
I
just read a book by Jonathan Cahn called "The Return of the Gods," and it's about what's happening to our society once we've taken God out, and what's filling it, and what's filling it is exactly what you're talking about is what filled it in past history. Is coming back to visit us again. And we really need to get back on course, because our government was really based on a godly people, and we're not following that anymore. And some bad things are coming, and we really need to recognize that.
Exactly. You know, it makes me think about there's a proverb, or it might actually be even in the book of Isaiah, But it says, when the wicked come in like a flood, God raises up a standard against them.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope and what I try and strive for is to, and I think it's part of our responsibility as his ambassadors in the world, to hold up that standard. The only reason we are the beneficiaries of what we, you know, take for granted and the liberties we're discussing is because other men before us stood. They believed in something. And were willing to pay pretty high costs. You know, a lot of the work I do, for instance, in administrative work and policy, there's some things I contract on and get compensated, but I do a huge amount of the work I do because I care about the issues and I'm concerned about raising that standard up in our culture and society. And the question is, if not you, who? And if yeah. not now, when?
Right.
So if God's placed me in my context to be able to do that with putting my time into trying to do some things and bring that standard up in those realms, then I'm going to try, at least in my capacity, to do that. And I'm kind of building a private membership association, which I'm kind of treating it like a missionary. but I'm not going to Zimbabwe. I'm going into the civil sphere to represent the property rights interests of individual people and their businesses, their land, their farming, mining, whatever area that is. And in that, I'm working on developing an educational component where we bridge the gap between theological realities and civic function and responsibility of man to perpetuate liberty in society. And I think I see more of that out there of some young folks and people and families really looking for the old paths and looking back to our fathers and, you know, how did they deal with these things and what warnings did they give to us to not fall by the same example?
Right.
So and that's where we're
yeah, we're ignoring a lot of those warnings now because it's exactly what they – what's happening is exactly what they said would happen if we didn't really follow, you know, what was put before us. And we're not. We're not following it, and we're going – we're splintering off, and you know, people aren't really together on so many things now. Everybody's just kind of going in a different direction. There's no unity. So, yeah, you're right. We need to kind of regroup a little bit and go back to, you know, what we originally stood for.
Exactly. So on that note, if you don't mind, I'm just going to – there's some – I don't know if you guys probably heard the song "Richmond, North of Richmond."
Yes.
Yep.
The guy whose name is not Oliver Anthony. His name's Christopher something or other. But yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And apparently, he just denied an $8 million contract.
Yes, I read that too.
From a bunch of music executives. But I bring that up because I saw a clip of him at a farmer's market or fair or something where he read out of Psalm 37. I'm just going to read a couple of those verses because it's a really good choice of verses that he read. And in the context, it'll be a good summary to our discussion today, I think, as well. So Psalm 37, it says, "A little while and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy great peace. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them, but the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend the bow to bring down the poor and needy, to slay those whose ways are upright, but their swords will pierce their own hearts, and their bows will be broken. Better the little that the righteous have than the wealth of many wicked. For the power of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The days of the blameless are known to the Lord, and their inheritance will endure forever. In times of disaster they will not wither, in days of famine they will enjoy plenty. But the wicked will perish, the Lord's enemies will be like the beauty of the fields. They will vanish like smoke." So there's a Psalm 37. And you see a lot of that language in the Psalms of just, man, you'd see this wickedness. It seems like they're prevailing and, you know, they grow old and everything's, they never have any struggles. And then the psalmist says, and then I came into the presence of the Lord and I saw their end and they have been placed in slippery places.
So. So you better.
So that's the consolation.
Yeah. Be careful which team you're playing on.
Yeah, it'll come around.
And you know the thing is, we have a lot of people in these agencies that want to do a good job, and don't. They're not down for the crazy stuff that their agencies are doing, and those guys are going to have to reach out to people who can help them, and they're going to have to be brave. There's going to have to be some bravery going forward.
Well, you know, you hear so much that, you know, politicians are all crooked. Well, who wants to run for office and try to do a good job when that's going to be the sentiment of, you know, oh, he's just a politician. And I hear so many people that are running for office that say, well, I'm not a politician. Well, you know, you're going to have to.
You will be in a minute, so I hope you do a good job.
Yeah, if you get elected, you're going to be a politician. But if good people don't run for these offices and try to make a change, change won't come.
No.
So we have to have good people run for office and not be afraid of what people are going to say, because that's the only way we're going
to
bring change.
You need them to get in there and hold a lot of these agencies accountable and hold the door open so that people who can make change, like Nathan, who do a lot of their homework, they can help us. Nathan, thank you so much for spending the afternoon with us, and we will speak to you again, no doubt. Very much appreciated. Any other information you have for us, please send it, and we will post it at
wethepeopleradio.us.
We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. No rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.